Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for your attendance, and thank you for H.C. Wainwright for having us this our third year here. These are our standard forward-looking statements. Platinum-based chemotherapy is a mainstay in therapy in solid tumors in pediatrics. Since its discovery of cisplatin in the late 70s, early 80s, has been really optimized in different regimens for solid tumors in pediatrics. The issue with cisplatin, and if you speak to pediatric oncologists, the number one issue that they identify cisplatin with is permanent and irreversible hearing loss. It occurs as soon as, in many cases, the second dose of cisplatin. And what we have seen, I would say, in the last several years since I've been involved in this company is that pediatric oncologists have really begin to focus on what we can do to minimize the side effect of this treatment. The treatment is quite promising. You have very high response rate. You have very high survival. So quality of life really, really matters for these kids. And the pictures to the right, you can see this a baby with a cochlear. So this right there is the cochlear implant on this very young child, or hearing aid, and this is what we have available today. So we are focused on the development of sodium thiosulfate, or PEDMARK, which is a unique formulation of that, for the prevention of platinum-induced ototoxicity in this pediatric population. We have 7.5 years of exclusivity, which is pediatric in the U.S., and we have 10 years data exclusivity upon approval in Europe. We have conducted in the last decade two clinical studies, one proof of concept study with Children Oncology Group. The study enrolled 130 patients over 5 years in highly heterogeneous solid tumor types. The study achieved its primary efficacy endpoint. It was presented at ASCO in 2014, and the final results were published in Lancet Oncology in 2016. Our pivotal study is enrolled 109, fully randomized study with 109 patients with a disease called standard risk hepatoblastoma. The disease is liver cancer, and it occurs in very, very young children. They're typically 12 to 13 months old. Importantly, very similar to the COG study, the study achieved its efficacy endpoint on the hearing, as well as show definitive evidence of no tumor protection. Those results were just published in the England Journal of Medicine in June of this year. We have been granted a fast track and breakthrough therapy designation by the FDA. We were just also recently issued a positive opinion on our pediatric investigational plan at EMA, which is sort of a mini approval before we file for full approval in Europe. Next steps are we are preparing actively the filing for PEDMARK in the U.S. and Europe. And our goal is to have this drug approved second half of next year. This is personally very, very important. STS would be the first drug ever with a label for prevention of hearing loss. So it's something that I'm really, really proud of what we've been able to achieve to generate this clinical data with a very, very small team. So going back onto the next slide, as I mentioned earlier, ototoxicity is typically dose-limiting for many of these patients. You see it as soon as the second dose. So what typically happens is that the dose is reduced, interrupted, sometimes switched to carboplatin, which is less ototoxic but also less effective on the tumor in many of these cases. The hearing loss occurs in the high-frequency area, so these patients lose the ability to hear consonants. They also lose the ability to hear background noise, which is also highly problematic. It's particularly acute in very young children when they're in the process of acquiring language skills. They lack further development. And older children, what we see with them is that they get depressed, they get isolated, they don't typically integrate very well. There is actually a meeting at the FDA coming up on September 13th. We just announced this morning, which is a patient-focused drug development meeting where long-term survivors of cisplatin, platinum-treated patients and their caregivers would be speaking about the awareness of the condition. And the main paper, and you'll see this from our clinical data, typically 60% of children that get the cisplatin therapy have this irreversible hearing loss. So this goes back to the devastating impact on their quality of life. These are patients with disease called neuroblastoma. It typically occurs in children under the age of 5. So they follow these patients longer term. So these are survivors of the disease. And you could see on the graph the histograms on the right. But by the time these children are in third grade, 30% of these patients are held back a grade. By the time they are ninth grade, roughly half of them are held back at least one grade. Again, speaks to their learning problems and poor quality of life. Two important factors that influence the hearing loss. One is obvious, the cumulative cisplatin dose, so the more you give, the more hearing loss you have. And typically these tumor types require quite intensive cisplatin regimen treatment. And the second one is age. So what we typically see is the 15 and under have much greater incidence of hearing loss than the 15 and over. And it has to do with acquisition of language skills, we believe, and how quickly those kids develop and process sound, with obviously the younger ones at much higher difficulty. The market opportunity in the U.S., we have roughly 5,000 patients every year that are with solid tumors and get platinum therapy, from which roughly 70% of them are low to intermediate risk patients versus 1,500 of them that are high-risk patients. In Europe, the market is very, very similar. And we'll get to the distinction between high-risk and low to intermediate-risk as we're going through the data coming up, why we segmented the market this way. So STS is, the key with STS is that it's administered as an IV at 6 hours post the cisplatin therapy. And it's a bolus dose, 20 grams per meter square is what we give, over 15 minutes. STS standalone is recognized as very, very safe. Mechanistically, how it works is that cisplatin has a very, very short half-life. Its half-life is 20 to 30 minutes max. And most of the platinum is unbound at the time STS comes in. Importantly, STS also only works extracellularly. It does not enter the cell. What we do know is that when we give STS together with cisplatin, STS interferes with the antitumor activity. So therefore, the six-hour delay in time and space is very critical. So what STS essentially is, it's a rescue to bound platinum for these patients. And bound platinum stays in the body for a very, very long time. And we think it's autotoxic. So the first study, which is the proof of concept study, that's got published in Lancet, enrolled highly heterogeneous tumor types, 130 patients. The primary endpoint here was to measure the hearing loss from the group that got STS versus the group that did not get STS. Keep in mind that the cisplatin was given per investigator standard for each tumor type and also disease severity. So you're dealing with highly heterogeneous tumors and also treatment regimens. The main point is 4 weeks after treatment, the audiometry for these patients. And the secondary endpoint being the important one to monitor event-free survival and overall survival. So you can see here from the graph on the participants' characteristics, the distribution, this is as close to real life as you get in the clinical setting. Anywhere between, these are from 0 to 18-year-old patients with germ cell, hepatoblastoma, medulloblastoma, PNET, which is a different tumor, but part of that group, neuroblastoma, osteosarcoma, and other tumors. And we also took in localized patients as well as patients with disseminated disease. This is the primary endpoint. So on the hearing, you could see 56% had hearing loss without STS versus 29% with STS, with a highly statistical p-value. This matches very well the reported incidence in literature. In addition, in a protocol predefined subpopulation of children under the age of 5, you could see there was 73% with hearing loss versus 21% with STS. Again, highly statistical significance for these patients. Event-free survival and overall survival at 3.5 years between the two groups was the same. However, what the investigators from COG noticed that after year two, there was a separation of the survival curves. And so what they did was they published this post hoc analysis where they looked at what was driving that difference. And what they found is that in tumors such as that are localized, there was no difference in event-free survival and overall survival versus in disseminated disease. There was no difference. There was roughly the same number of events, but there were 6 excess deaths on the STS arm. So they tried to explain that in the paper, the finding, obviously, it's difficult to explain in the sense that this was not this finding is essentially post hoc. We have looked through the data ourselves. What's really interesting to us is that the mortality rate is really driven by mainly the other tumors in the study. There was no stratification against. But nevertheless, this is published, and obviously we have it in our presentation as well. We have a second study, which is the pivotal study. This is the one that got published in the England Journal of Medicine very recently. The study was, unlike the COG study, actually took only one tumor, which is liver cancer. It occurs in 12 to 13-month-old babies. Cisplatin is given to these patients as a monotherapy, so there was no heterogeneity in the type of tumors that were exposed. So it was just one tumor and cisplatin monotherapy. These patients also have very good prognosis, so roughly 90% of them live. And given they're so young, the need there is quite obvious for a autoprotectant. So you could see here the study schema. You've got 4 cycles of cisplatin, you got delayed surgery, and you got 2 cycles of cisplatin after that versus delayed STS administration 6 hours later. Again, very, very clean study. You could see the hearing loss, highly confirmatory of what we saw from COG. 63% had hearing loss without STS versus 33% with STS with a highly statistical p-value. You could also see the sensitivity of the hearing loss based on grade, where STS reduces that incidence throughout. The important slide here is the event-free survival and overall survival, where they did not see any difference. In fact, there were 2 excess deaths on cisplatin versus cisplatin plus STS. So what can we say definitively? Obviously, we wish that CYAPEL 6 study had addressed the issue of tumor protection, perhaps in disseminated disease, but it was only done in localized disease. But what we can say from both studies definitively is that STS clearly prevents hearing loss from cisplatin. The effect is even more pronounced in the children under the age of 5. And it's also very clear, at least from both studies, that in localized disease, there's no difference in survival. So where we are on the developmental timeline, as I mentioned earlier, we have received fast track designation, as well as we have a positive opinion from EMA. We are in the process of preparing these studies. There's a lot of work involved with that. And we're gearing up for filing later on this year and with the goal of getting this drug approved next year. You could see our capital structure here. It's We have roughly $180 million market cap, and with a shareholder base that has been with me for a very long time. And just to mention to our board of directors, he's highly, highly experienced. They have had quite a bit of experience as well in pediatric oncology with defibrotide at Gentium, as well as Oncospar with Sigma Tau. So they have been very, very helpful to us. And we have a small team of employees and consultants that have been working on this file for a while. So with that, I will just open up for questions. So the question is, when do we plan to file? So first, we need to meet with the FDA to have a pre-NDA meeting, and then we'll update the market as to when we do it. We need to first agree on a rolling submission, and then we'll update the market. But our goal is to have the drug approved in the second half next year.
What's your commercialization plan? Are you guys looking to go alone, or?
Yeah, the question is on the commercialization plans and if we plan on doing it alone. I think certain territories, it makes sense for us to do it ourselves. Certain territories, it makes sense to actually partner with other companies where they have presence. So in particularly when it comes to Europe, where it's much more fragmented versus the U.S. And especially as well as Asia. So we'll obviously undertake those activities sometimes next year before approval. But our goal is basically to do it ourselves in the U.S.
In terms of pricing, what's your thoughts on that? You've got 3,000 patients.
Yeah, so the question is on pricing. I mean, I think it's, we live in times where, pricing, it becomes a very sort of, charges both sides, if you will. We've been at this for 10 years. We've conducted these studies. We've served the pediatric oncology community, and it's time for our shareholders to get a fair return on their investment. At the same time, we have to also serve the community, and we cannot just take every penny off the table because we can. So I think, we have to look at it also, what would be acceptable in Europe versus what would be acceptable in the U.S. and do it in a way that there's no big difference between the two. So I think we're very, very sensitive to that. But just to give you an idea, if you look at cochlear implants, they cost roughly, one of them costs about $100,000 in the U.S. and you have to replace it every 11 years. Then you take hearing aids, and they are roughly about $1,000 a year, and you have to replace them. They're roughly $4,000, and you have to replace them every 4 years. So there's a lifetime cost associated with those devices.
And your finances are?
So we have roughly $25 million. That's one thing I probably should have spent a little more time on, is that I'm really, really proud of how we manage capital and how we don't really like to dilute our shareholders. We are significant shareholders, so we don't do that. So just to give you an idea, our first 6 months of the year, we spent $3 million. Last year, we spent $4 million. And we finished June 30th with $25 million. So we think the money is sufficient for us to launch the product next year. Thank you.